Thanks for coming. This is kind of the time of day that's got the lowest crowds, right? But the highest quality, though, right? So I'm going to talk with you about some of the things we're doing in extension programming in the area of reducing ammonia emissions. So to lay the background or to lay the framework for that, we need to talk a little about why this matters. And Colorado has sort of some special situations that create a special need, and that is the Rocky Mountain National Park and specifically. And this is not just limited to the park boundaries, but that's where it gets the most attention. So what's been going on there is they've been measuring nitrogen deposition in the park for about 25 years and noted a gradual increase in nitrogen deposition over those 25-year period. It's up to about 5 to 7 pounds per acre per year, right? From an agricultural point of view, you go, so what, right? But because of what the ecosystem is like up there, that small amount can have a big effect. So this is what it looks like on the top of those mountains. They're called rocky for a reason. They're basically rocky. You know, there's not much soil, not a lot of plants. So basically, very little buffering capacity for dealing with that nitrogen. So what happens is the nitrogen flows through those soils very rapidly and ends up in alpine lakes. So we've seen increased levels of nitrate in the surface water. We've also seen changes in leaf nitrogen concentrations and soil nitrogen concentrations, and some ecological shifts have begun to occur. And so that's kind of the reason why this matters for you to hear about this at the agronomy meetings. So where does that nitrogen come from? That's going to be our connection to agronomy here. The estimates or the measurements are that about half of that is landing as nitrate and about half as ammonium. And when you look at the ammonia sources, well, the nitrate sources are primarily from cars and industrial sources. But the ammonium sources come from lots of other sources, including native soil emissions, wildlife emissions, human perspiration and breath, and agriculture, and some other things. But so what the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment did was create an inventory to assess the sources. And then after they tried to estimate all those sources, and this was strictly a computer exercise, there were no measurements involved. But after that, they removed from the database the uncontrollable sources. Things like the elk in the park and the humans, those things were considered uncontrollable. Well, that increased the percentages for agriculture, obviously, when you remove some sources. So that brought agricultural source up to 60%. About two-thirds estimated to come from livestock, about one-third from fertilizer use. And so that's why this is important to us in Colorado and the surrounding area. I'd like to tell you a little about what was going on with the politics before we get to more extension-y things. Well, aren't politics and extension, don't they go together? But anyway, this started when the Park Service released a report describing ecological changes that had been occurring over that 25-year period. And then the public, especially those living around the park, got concerned. And in particular, in addition to ecological changes related to that nitrogen deposition, there's also a reduction in visibility. So the views in the park are reduced. Of course, there are many cars that go through the park that contribute to that too, but agriculture does have a role to play as well. So then the Colorado Air Quality Control Commission came to action, and this is a long story, but it ended with the development of the Nitrogen Deposition Reduction Plan in August 2007. That plan is a 25-year plan. It's based on voluntary reductions in BMPs, but it has five-year checkpoints. So we're already more than 2 years into this plan. We have 3 years to the first checkpoint, basically where they're going to see, are we achieving the reduction in nitrogen emissions that we need to achieve, or do we need to do something else more than voluntary to speed things up? So as you can imagine, the agricultural community got kind of concerned about all this. And so, but what's really been fun is to deal with them as a team. That a team called the Rocky Mountain National Park Ag Team was formed, and it's very broadly diverse within the agricultural community. All aspects are included, but also environmental groups, like Environmental Defense is part of that group. And of course, regulators are part of that group, and the university is part of that. So it's actually terrific to be at the table with them to figure out what can we do about this. First of all, how much of this really is from ag? And then secondly, what can we do about our emissions? So we were fortunate enough to get a CIG project, Conservation Innovation Grant, from NRCS to fund this work. We just received a second one, too, so the work can continue. That's a good thing. And we have two primary goals. One is to demonstrate and evaluate BMPs that reduce ammonia emissions. We're focusing on feedlots and dairies, since the majority of the agricultural input is expected to come from there. And then secondly, we're working on how to increase adoption rates. So I'll tell you a little bit about a survey that we've done to document what the BMP adoption rates already are and some of the things we've learned from that survey. So just quickly, this slide shows the equipment that we used. We aren't measuring ammonia fluxes in this study, but or in these demonstrations, but just concentrations, because we're just getting at relative differences with and without BMP, something that we could do quickly in the field and demonstrate to producers. So here are just a couple of examples of some of the BMPs that we've looked at. We've looked at alum application on feedlots. You can see what that looks like in those pictures. Alum application works great immediately after application. We saw reductions of about half. But after 2 days of cattle walking around on it and pooping on it, it's gone and there has no effect. So that is, it would be extremely costly and unpractical to use. We also looked at trying compost bedding on dairies. The typical bedding that's used in Colorado is the sand bedding. And the idea is that sand acts as a filter, right? That the liquid would go through and solids would be on top, and that would reduce ammonia emissions. That works for a while, but then it fills up, right? They don't replace it. In fact, I was going to say they don't replace it often enough, but they never replace it. They just add more on top. And so it just fills up with urine, and then the filtering process isn't happening anymore. But anyway, so we tried compost bedding and saw over a month's time that we got over a 40% reduction in ammonia emissions. So those are the kinds of things we're doing with producers to see what will actually work, and not just what works, but whether they're practical, what do they cost, and things like that as well. In addition to the field work, we have done a survey, which was really important for us to understand what BMPs people are already using and what are the constraints to further adoption of those BMPs. So about 2,000 surveys were sent out to feedlots and dairies, not just in Colorado, but also to the east of us. The estimates of the transport of ammonium was once it's converted to PM2.5, to a particle, it can move up to 1,500 miles. So this is not just a Colorado problem. 1,500 miles reaches almost from coast to coast from when you're in Colorado. So it could have a widespread impact. So I'll focus for a sec on what we concentrated on in that survey. We were asking about what BMPs they already use and what their perceptions are of different BMPs. Are they good for the environment? Are they costly? Things like that. And then also the basic things you would do in a survey, like your farm characteristics, things that we can help to tease out which BMPs are more likely to be used by which types of producers. And then we're hoping to use those results to focus our extension efforts so that we don't waste time encouraging a BMP with people who are very unlikely to ever use it, but can focus our extension programming. So here are some of the results of that survey. Do I have a pointer up here?
Oh, sorry.
No pointer? Oh, I can use the mouse, huh? I can? Oh, you mean on the screen?
Yeah.
I see. Gotcha. Okay, so this takes a minute to get oriented to these slides, and there's another one that follows. So I'll take a sec to describe it. On the x-axis, we have the probability of adopting a BMP. So 1.0 means 100% adoption, right? 0 means nobody's adopting. And then on the, just a sec, did I pass one? No, sorry. I think I did pass one. Okay, so then on the y-axis, for this slide, we have the perception of profitability. So this is, did the producers think this was a profitable practice? And if they considered it profitable, 5 was the top of the scale. So most profitable to least profitable. And then what you can see is different BMPs respond differently on this curve. So let's take a look at this blue one. The blue line is incorporate, right? So this is incorporate manure applications within 24 hours of application. And so you can see that one is one where profitability has a big effect on adoption, or the perception of profitability, right? So as people see this as a more profitable enterprise, more profitable thing to do, they will increase their probability of adopting that BMP, right? So this gives us an idea of what would help us if we do an educational effort on the profitability of these three BMPs, we might see some good improvements in use or adoption of those. Where this BMP is soil testing. This one is the perception of profitability doesn't have a big effect on the adoption. Adoption, even if they think it's not profitable, about 80% of the people do it anyway. So that's partially because of regulatory requirements, of course. So here's another slide that helps us to focus our extension program. Again, the same x-axis, but this time the y-axis is the number of head of cattle. So we wanted to get at how does size affect the adoption of different practices. So this, and you can see they're different. Let's take a look at this one first. This is the use of shade in a cattle feed yard. And you can see that as the operations get larger, the probability of adoption gets smaller. So this is a practice that has higher potential use among smaller producers. And that makes a lot of sense, right? There's more management involved. And then, but most of them are more like these graphs, the yellow, green, and red. The red is nutrition means the use of a nutritionist. So it seems that everybody above about 3,000 or 4,000 head hires a nutritionist to help them to keep from overfeeding nitrogen and minimize ammonia losses that way. They're not doing that to reduce ammonia losses, obviously. They're doing that because it's profitable. But that's okay. We'll take it. Then the yellow and green lines, though, runoff means collect runoff, and the green means testing manure, okay? So those two practices are things that have, where the size has a big effect. What's interesting to me is for cattle feed yards, those are both required with only 1,000 head of cattle. But what they're telling us is they don't all do it till they get up over 20,000 head. So we have a bit of a regulatory gap in there between 1,000 and 20,000, where, again, I think that extension can have an impact here in moving this lines over. So I can't go through all the results of our survey work, but it really helped us to focus our efforts, and I'll just summarize some of those points here. First of all, we learned that it's important to focus on improving the perception of profitability of some of the things listed here, and these things really can be profitable. Soil and manure testing, incorporating manure to conserve nitrogen and reduce your fertilizer bill can be profitable, but we need to do an educational effort to improve the perception of that profitability. And then it also helps us to know what size operation we should focus on for different BMPs. So for example, the smaller CAFOs, that 1,000 to 20,000 range, we should be focusing on runoff collection and manure testing. So, so because there's a lot of room for improvement there, but they're likely to adopt, I think. They also, some of the questions on the survey also told us what people felt they needed technical assistance for and what things they needed cost sharing for. So they told us they needed technical assistance for soil and manure testing. I think that's not, the, what they're saying there is not necessarily they need help taking the samples, but that they need help interpreting the results. And so that's something that Extension can help with, as well as NRCS. Cost sharing, the one that came out most important there is that the smaller operations that aren't currently using a nutritionist would like to have cost sharing on helping to pay for a nutritionist. So the survey was really a very beneficial tool in helping us to figure out how to focus our Extension efforts. So then I'll just briefly tell you some of the things we're working on to actually do the Extension. Now, in addition to the demonstrations I showed you pictures of, and you know how a picture's worth a thousand words, so we, I think demonstrations are really important, but to get those, the results of those out beyond just those few farms, we've also developed a website whose address is shown here, ammoniabmp.info, and we're in the process of developing all the things on that website that we want to have, including fact sheets on specific BMPs, photo galleries that document what those BMPs are so people know how to do them, decision tools. We're developing two decision tools, one that's focused more on efficacy of BMPs in different situations, and the other that's focused on a cost estimator for different BMPs. In addition to that, we've done a webcast through eExtension, through the Livestock and Poultry Environmental Stewardship Program, through as part of eExtension, and we've developed a video as well as part of another project, an NRI project. So we're taking many different approaches to trying to get the word out to reduce ammonia emissions from ag. And I'd be happy to take any questions if we have time.